Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Most weeks, not this week, has been daily. Most weeks is pretty daily. We try to be daily. It's daily-ish. Part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Moore. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. You can join us every Friday at 12:30 on the Locker Room app as we do our Nuggets mailbag. Adam and I will be back tomorrow. I'm recording the episode locally, so we don't have to worry about the Locker Room issues with the recording. We're going to have the episode up for you. We will ask you to come on stage. We will ask you, you can bring on your takes, your questions, your complaints about me, of course, because nobody complains about Adam. You can do all that tomorrow at noon on Locker Room, noon Mountain Time, Locker Room, changing the way that we talk sports. No Adam Morris tonight, but I am very excited to be joined by two good friends of mine. First, my former seatmate at Pepsi Center, now Ball Arena, making his podcast return. Now it's again for the second time since I forgot to press record the first time that I started this episode. TJ McBride is back. What's up, TJ?
When are things not chaotic when you and I are involved in anything? So this is very par for the course, despite us being apart for so many months in this industry. So this fits as well as you can possibly imagine when it comes to our relationship as friends.
One of the things that I miss most about going to games, and I'm probably going to my first game. I'm technically fully vaxxed on, I think, next Monday.
Nice. Congratulations.
But the thing I miss most about games back in the normal times, in the before times, where those moments where something would happen on the court and you and I would just turn and look at each other with that, like, either good or bad. It would, like, there would be defensive rotations where I would just look at you. And if it was like Porter, you would be like, I know. And if Porter did something well, you would look at me and I'd be like, I know.
All of our tools conversations have kind of finally come to fruition, Matt. That's all I need to say.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
We'll I just
that
needed to bit. At least get that moment in.
Also joining me, we worked this out. We're trying to think of the actual official title for the technically the site manager at SB Nation's DenverStiffs.com, host of the Picks, Axe, and Roll podcast, which you should download and subscribe to today. The warlord of DenverStiffs.com, Ryan Blackburn. Ryan, thanks for coming on.
Matt, for the second time, I'm going to comment on the poor war room effort from the Denver Broncos, who were just absolutely awful today in drafting not a quarterback or not getting Aaron Rodgers. So I thought that it was so nice. I had to say it twice for this particular time.
Matt, you hate to see it, don't you, TJ?
It's just so awful.
You hate to see it.
It'll also be terrible when everyone wakes up tomorrow morning. Aaron Rodgers is a Raider. It's just going to be awful. It's going to be so bad.
See, what's funny though is like part of me, like I was very much like, I don't want the Broncos to get him because I just don't want to hear. Like,
I don't want to hear anything. I don't need the, like, Peyton Manning 2.0. I don't need it.
And like they failed last time with Manning and then lucked out in that last year, that run with a really not good team that won the Super Bowl. And I don't want them doing that again this year. Honestly, because of the Raiders, like I say, oh, that's fine.
It would just be comically fantastic. That's all it is go select a corner, your seventh cornerback on your roster, to then not get Aaron Rodgers to your division rival. That is just a glorious mess. I need that in my life.
It's Serbians
right now. Guys, just going,
this is the most football I've spoken about in a decade, guys. This is very new.
And the Argentinians that are mad at all of us for not talking enough about Flacco Campazzo are equally upset. The Denver Nuggets get the win tonight over the Toronto Raptors, fourth in a row, 121-111. They are 8-1 since the Jamal Murray injury. I had this up. They've won a bunch of games and lost very few. That's what you should know.
It's like they're 13-3 in April. It's
13-3 in April. Since February 27th, it's like 26-6. Third. Like this is the one. Since February 27th, they have won 80% of their games.
Those numbers don't seem real. Like when you put them into a
17 Warriors.
Yeah.
Like, it's just nuts.
A pretty good run there for the old home team. a grinded out game decided in the fourth quarter by a defensive stand that really just kind of put that salted the game away. Porter finishes with 23 points on 8 of 19 shooting. We're going to talk a lot about him. Jokic with a quiet night. Didn't play much in the fourth quarter because he didn't have to. Got only 28 minutes and 25 seconds on the back-to-back. You like to see that. 19-11 and only two assists for Jokic. We'll talk to Ryan about that. Dozier with a plus 25 in this game. 4 of 11 from the field for 10 points, but of course the defense is what kind of gets the job done. Austin Rivers with a big night. 4 of 9 from the field, 11 points, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a plus 17. I don't know why. Look at that. Look at that. Paul Millsap, 3 of 6 from the field, 8 points, 7 rebounds for a plus 23. We'll get to all that in a second.
See that? Pretty good.
TJ, we'll talk about Paul Millsap. Sir.
Very, very nice.
TJ McBride, what was your big takeaway from tonight's game?
There was a lot of bigger takeaways, but I think when you're looking at what is to come, I think the way Austin Rivers has been playing for the Nuggets, and shots have not fallen, but the way he has played basketball recently has been the most encouraging stretch of this, you know, portion of the season. They need their guard depth. They don't have anyone left, and who knows what's going to happen with Morris and with Will, because both of those injuries are extremely finicky. You have no idea exactly when you're going to get them back or what quality of player you're going to get back if they do return. So to see Austin Rivers not only understand his role, but to do everything he can to buy into it, it's not something I expected, and I didn't think he would be this productive at it, even with his shots not falling. So for me, Austin Rivers being able to find a niche and really be able to blend that bench unit together has allowed the Nuggets enough breathing room when Jokic is not on the court. So that, to me, is the biggest, you know, takeaway from this game tonight.
Ryan, what was your big takeaway?
I think it's got to be just the overall cohesiveness of that bench unit, right? Like this team on a back-to-back, it's very important to find some sort of extra gear. They really didn't have it up until like through three quarters. They're kind of playing with that lead. It was kind of in and out of good focus. And then that bench unit comes in, led by Paul Millsap, I think, and they just rain hellfire on the defensive end. That was what really stood out. A cohesive unit, 5 players all playing really well together and capitalizing on the opportunities that they had on the offensive end. They just locked down the Toronto Raptors. And that's what you need on a back-to-back. It can't always be about Nikola Jokic. It's been about him for so much of this season that he needed a break. Michael Porter got his opportunity to step up and kind of hit some shots, and that was big. But overall, it really was that 5-man unit with the bench, PJ Dozier, Austin Rivers, MPJ, Jamichael Green, who had a big bounce back in that fourth, and Paul Millsap, of course.
In the 6 minutes and 46 seconds that PJ Dozier played in the fourth quarter, the Toronto Raptors scored 0.545 points per possession. If you're not familiar, you want to be like, if you're like 1 point per possession, it's pretty good. It's not bad.
Yeah.
You know, in today's NBA, you're hoping for like a 1.05 to 1.1. Mm-hmm. If you're at anything below 0.8, you're in trouble. Yeah. If you're at 0.5, then basically you are just lying around in a puddle thrashing. It was just absolute domination tonight. I found this stat and tweeted it, and I have to share it. But I have to share a tweet first. At, let's see, what time was this? 7:34 p.m., Ryan Blackburn tweets, Paul Millsap playing tonight on a back-to-back over JaVale McGee. Period. No commentary on that.
Period.
You know, hey, let me defend myself here, because up until this point, through the second half of the season on post All-Star break, Paul Millsap has played one or the other of back-to-backs. And I thought it was notable that he was playing on both of these games. I just thought that was a notable thing that I shared.
I don't believe you. don't believe you. You're a liar. And because you have been the king of the JaVale McGee needs to play more brigade. Yes. In the 9 games since Jamal Murray got hurt, the Nuggets have an 87.7 defensive rating in the 127 minutes that Paul Millsap has played. And additionally, they're a plus 29.4 in the minutes that Paul Millsap has played in net rating.
You want to know what's even crazier? I found another stat. In the last 15 games, Paul Millsap on the court compared to off the court, when he comes off, their defense becomes 20 points worse in terms of defensive rating, from 94.4 to 114.4. That is just insane amounts of impact on the game.
I'm trying to think of how to work Renaissance into Millsap. Renaissance? Oh, that
just absolutely fell apart in your hands miserably. That is not the one.
No.
Like, I know this is your podcast and I haven't been here in a long time, but that is not it.
I think so. I think it could be. I will say this. I will say that with JaVale on the floor, they're only allowing a 103 defensive rating, which is like 16 points worse than with Millsap, but it's still excellent. Like they're
let's quantify.
Yeah,
that
I love how you said 15 points worse than Millsap before specifying that it is still good.
Yeah, this
is still
good. Be the best defense good. In the NBA, but like
he's only played 22 minutes. But yeah, no, it's still okay. good.
Let me just say this. I think that Paul Millsap, especially with this current defensive unit, they are going to kill people defensively. Mm-hmm. They have been awesome. When you put together Shaq Harrison, Austin Rivers, Faku and PJ in there as well, alongside JaMychal Green and Paul Millsap, there's just a lot of smart, switchable defenders who get their hands in passing lanes and do a really good job contesting. That's never really been my contention about that unit. It's always been the offensive end and trying to make sure that they don't like go through those 0 point stretches for the first 3 minutes of the quarter. Yeah. That it just happened that Toronto went on tonight. So it was flipped tonight. That was a really, really important swing.
And plus, I think it's very unfair to expect anything offensively like what Shaq Harrison put out tonight. Like Shaq Harrison has a 98 offensive rating this season. Like we cannot expect him to be able to get these coast to coast finishes and hit a corner three. And like that's not going to be something stable either. So while we're in a nice honeymoon phase with this bench unit, let's be very cognizant of the flaws that exist on so many parts of that group still. So it's working now, but I'm not there yet. I do not see it. I don't get it. If they can get enough stops like this, which I don't see happening for the next, you know, month and a half or whatever it is till the season ends, but that's nerve. I'm still nervous about that. It's good to see it working now, but is this really sustainable? I'm not there with them yet.
Well, I think part of it with me though is I think Rivers helps. I'm also kind of projecting forward to, let's say that after the doom stretch, which we'll talk about in the third segment. After the next stretch of like dominant teams, they faced basically three lottery squads in Portland to finish the season.
So four lottery squads.
Yeah.
accurate, but rude. So if they're facing those teams, once they get to that point, right, I think Morris or Barton are back by that point. And then you have one of the starters can at least have more minutes with the bench unit and help hold that bench unit up offensively. Plus, or alternatively, like if it's Monte, I think Monte helps run that offense and gives you a little bit more scoring burst because he can shoot a little bit more. If it's Barton, you get to mix and match a little bit more, right? You just get to mix and match some different pieces in there and maybe find something that works. Like, and then you're only trying to get through that last four games. But this has been my thing the whole way is like, I don't really worry about the bench unit that much because I'm just like, well, especially now, like we're nine games to the playoffs. They just got to get through this next like nine games. And then your starters are going to play. It'll be interesting to see what the rotations are. I'm expecting them to basically play, to keep kind of where they're at now, where Jokic plays the entire first quarter and the entire third quarter, and then just comes back sooner in the fourth. Like that's basically my assumption. And I think it'll probably be that way for most of the starters. Like, I don't know who, I can't think of a guy that they would specifically want to stagger because for whatever reason, they haven't wanted to separate MPJ from Jokic. I don't entirely understand why.
We should stop there because it makes sense that when you're asking him to do so much that you pair him with the smartest basketball player on earth, correct? Like when you're asking him to expand his game with Jamal Murray out, you do need a safety net because that can also go very wrong very quickly. Michael Porter has taken some serious leaps and I have been incredibly impressed with it, but the idea that he won't just get kind of reckless when outside of that system that Jokic immediately implements just by existing, I do start to wonder if there's concern there. Just letting him go cook off the bench. I don't know if there's as much validity there, especially when everything gets a lot tighter in the playoffs, if you can really expect him to create offense like that. I do understand the thinking, I think.
I also will say that once you get Morris and Barton back, it becomes easier to stagger just because then you're not putting Shaq Harrison, Austin Rivers, JaMychal Green, Aaron Gordon, or whatever you want to put out there and trying to surround Jokic with just really, really guys that can't really space the floor. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. One of the things that I think we're going to see a little bit more once people get healthy is that if you get into situations where the bench is really struggling to score, you could put Porter at the four, play one of JaMychal Green or Paul Millsap at the five, and just try to blitz teams that way with three good defensive guards, but a little bit more open spacing. We'll see how they decide to do it. But that is something, and there are other things that, like, once you get Will Barton back and once you get Monte Morris back, Nuggets fans, they got to understand now how valuable those guys are. Just kind of just tangible, traditional ball handling a little bit.
The obligatory mention for Facco Campazzo, 30 minutes, 12 points, 4 assists, plus minus a 0, but it's fine. I thought totally fine game from Campazzo. I didn't think it was all that big of a problem.
What he did at the end of the fourth quarter to Malachi Flynn in the corner was extremely rude. Just so disrespectful.
It was every second.
It was so funny.
There really isn't a better, like, one play defensive summary of who Facco Campazzo is than that, like, 6 seconds of excitement. It really is how he plays basketball. Like, he is relentless, and it's been great that the Nuggets have him. Tim Connelly deserves more credit for going out and getting extra creators, knowing that this is going to be a physically demanding season. That was something that was going to be important. They did not have enough creators in the playoffs last year or the year before when they got banged up, and they addressed it, and now they're reaping those benefits, which are, in my opinion, huge, because here they are winning games that, frankly, no one expected them to win after all these injuries. And a lot of that's to do with the fact that they can put together at least a unit that can go out there and function at a high level when they need to.
By the way, if you're wondering who to blame for all the injuries, you need to blame TJ, because TJ was the one that said that Facco Campazzo would wind up starting.
It's a good, if you wanted to match Facco, that's how you do it. But sure, I'm not around, so you can blame me. I can be the guy hiding in my room during a pandemic, not taking the blame. Just log out of Twitter. I don't need that anymore. It's a wonderful thing.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the MPJ game as well as his dynamic with Michael Malone. A lot of stuff post-game there. We'll do that after we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I got to tell you about rockauto.com, because if you go to rockauto.com, you're going to find the parts for your car or truck that you need, and you're going to find the same prices for you as they are for mechanics. I hate the idea that some dude gets a better price than me, because that just doesn't seem like a business. Like, I understand that you're a professional, that makes sense, but if I'm buying the part for my car, I want to get the same price. And that's what you get at rockauto.com. No membership, no account login. You just go, you shop for the best prices, you check out, and you get the best prices, the best selection at rockauto.com. It's a family business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. And like we said, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and they're the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in there. How did you hear about us, box? So they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for making this part of your day. TJ McBride and Ryan Blackburn joining me for this, the Young Guns episode, I'll call it that, because I'm old now. I'm just old. There's so many ways I'm old. I'm old in part. I had this huge argument with Pelicans Twitter today, and like the Pelicans fans are trying, what they're basically trying to tell me is like, yes, he is more impactful and more physically imposing than Shaq was, Zion Williamson.
Oh, we're getting into this?
And like, they don't want to say it, but so they're trying to like talk around it. And I'm just like, I was 13 when Shaq entered the league. And so I saw him and I saw the whole career, and like, Zion's amazing. Zion's really amazing. He's incredible. He's just an absolutely absurd player, and he's gonna be so much fun to watch. And they've unlocked a lot of stuff, even though their team is still really kind of garbage. And all of these things, not comparable physically at all. Not a thing that you can really compare. So anyway, I'm old.
If you lose games, you don't have any leg to stand on there for a comparison to Shaquille O'Neal. If your team is 5 games under 500,
can we stop comparing people to Shaq in general? Can we just stop doing that forever?
Giannis, I think,
like,
it's just comparable.
End it. The play style does exist comparable, but nobody is ever going to play in the same way Shaq did. Just isn't going to happen. So, like, I'm done discussing anybody related to Shaq. It doesn't mean anything to me anymore.
That's true.
That's a shame, Fred, but still, like, this is not the conversation to have anymore. Like, just let Zion be Zion. That's the whole point of this, is to let him be the best version of himself, not to make him Shaq. Oh, no.
I let TJ on a podcast, and now all the takes are spilling out of him.
I've had a lot of time to stare at this color of gray on my wall, Matt.
He's been marinating for a little bit.
Just a take volcano erupting here on Locked On Nuggets. All right, let's talk about MPJ. You know, 8-19, which is not bad. Like, it's sub 50% shooting, so it's below his standard, which that's absurd. That's just wild, but true. 23 points on 19 shots. Bad first half, got it going in the second half, plus 16, took over a little bit, did his thing, had a moment of tension with Malone in the first half, and there was some barking back and forth. Asked about it post-game, and he said all the right things. He said he doesn't take it personally. He knows it's constructive criticism. I will say there's all these, like everyone's like, oh, look at the maturity, and like, look, and I'm like, I just got to warn you, like, don't not trust them, but don't trust, like, disregard those comments, because if Porter were to say, like, yeah, like, sometimes he pisses me off, that's like a huge, like, yeah, giant warning sign, right?
Do you remember him just saying he thought that he needed more shots because the flow of the game was just very one-sided? He was right, and literally Twitter collapsed upon itself.
He didn't say he needed more shots. He said the team needed more shots away from Nikola and Jamal.
Yes. Sorry, so that's clearly very here. Different things but that it, Porter's trying to say.
The team of me needs more shots.
Like, let's be very
Nikola and Murray, you know, like me, and also MPJ, me.
His name is Michael Lamar Porter. So no, I hear you, and what I will say is that you and Adam talked about his resilience last night, and I think that matters. I think that it really stands out that his ability to sort of bounce back in those situations where he has a bad moment, he kind of shirks that he shakes it off a little bit and still is able to come back out and perform and do some good things. I think that's really important. And we saw OG Anunoby go 8 of 21 tonight. It wasn't all because of Michael Porter, but OG Anunoby really started off well against Michael Porter and then went at him in the second half and it didn't work out as well. So you're seeing the growth there. You're seeing his overall willingness to defend when he gets yelled at a little bit more. It was a bad first half, and there were a lot of bad dribble moments, is what I will say, even in that third quarter. But he's learning. This is a part of the growth process. If this was a Jamal Murray game in his second or third year, we would talk about the growth that he is showing as well.
Porter with a 151 offensive rating in the second half. That's a thing that happened.
It Dozier sounds like when a passer rating is perfect at 153.6. Like, that's how that feels.
Like, all these numbers are crazy. Like, Austin Rivers, 160. Dozier, 169. Jamichael Green, 160. Paul Millsap, a 178.9 offensive rating in the second half.
What happened? I'm still kind of at a loss for how they made this work. It was incredible.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll tell you, the biggest thing is
shots.
Now go look at the other roster. Yeah. Like, the Raptors are not a top-heavy team. They're balanced, right? It's coaching. It's nurse, like, piecing things together. It's player development. They lost Norman Powell. Right. Lowry's not at the end of his last year of his last deal with the Raptors. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's free agency. I'm not saying like Kyle's still Kyle, and Kyle gave PJ Dozier what I thought was a pretty nasty, like, Hastings. Hastings was trying to kind of be like, because Lowry's been in the league so long, he's like, well, you know, I think it looked worse than it was. And my thing is, I'm just like, go ask Aaron Gordon about Kyle Lowry's. Like, I'm not saying that Kyle's dirty, because I don't think Kyle is. Kyle gives
hard
fouls.
When you cross-check somebody in midair, like, it's going to be somewhat dangerous. Like, that is the reality that exists.
Yeah, that's the thing that Kyle does. But, like, look at this rotation. Dirty. Like, you know, Watanabe played 9 minutes tonight. Mm-hmm. Gillespie, who I think is pretty good, but played 7:21. You know, Jalen Harris gets 5 minutes.
Gillespie, he blocked Paul Millsap's shot at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and then Denver proceeded to go on a 25-6 run after Gillespie was talking shit. Don't talk to Paul Millsap. What are you doing? What are you doing?
This is the biggest reason I've been talking to Clippers fans today. I started a bunch of Twitter fights today. That's what they do my days. I wrote like 1,000 words on the playoffs, and in between, I fought with like everyone.
And wrote like 22,000 words on your Twitter timeline. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So anyway, I was talking to Clippers fans, and one of the things I was trying to say was I was just like, one of the reasons I don't trust your team is Marcus Morris.
Yeah.
It's like he made that decision last year to talk shit to Paul, and like from that point on, it was curtains. Don't do that. But like, this is a lot of is the Raptors are just trying to get to the end. I mean, I honestly don't know. I don't think the Raptors are in a place where I don't think they're super interested in the plan. Like, I just
don't want to go home.
Nor should they be.
Yeah. Like they're stuck in Tampa.
Yeah.
Like, they're stuck in Tampa. And, you know, like, all the things about Toronto versus other NBA markets, like, you have a home in Toronto. Like, mm-hmm. you have a house, or you have an apartment, and, like, it's your city, and, like, you're comfortable there, and you're living out of a box in Tampa, right? Like, it's just...
They've been in a year-long bubble in Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that sounds horrendous.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, like, I try not to, like, bag on various cities very much. Florida makes it easier, but...
Oh, it's Florida. They're not ever qualified for that.
But
just go off, TJ.
Yeah, TJ's just like flamethrower. Everyone burns tonight.
You guys just forgot about podcasting with me. That's all this is.
But like they definitely seemed like they were done. And that was the thing is like the Nuggets got to the fourth quarter and the Nuggets were like, all right, let's hit him with it. And like they hit him with like one punch and that like the Raptors went down. You know, it's like they spent three rounds like ducking and working the body, and then the Nuggets just decided, all right, let's go for one. Hit one haymaker and down. Like that was it. The Raptors were like, all right, we're out.
It felt like playing a tanking team at the end of the season where like everything is like a tough fight for 2.5 quarters and it just falls apart. That is just such a constant that I see in this league at this point. And it really felt like that, which is so surprising for a team that has Kyle Lowry on it. It just didn't feel the right way, but hey, that's what happens.
So like, it's not to say that this is like a bad win or the Nuggets didn't deserve to win because they played really well, but that's like why this wound up being blown open is like the Raptors just didn't have the horses. Cause I think that's part of it is Nurse didn't have another good lineup to turn to.
Yeah.
Like he didn't have somebody be like, all right, like let's go, you know, let's go to Siakam or not Siakam, but like, let's go to Powell or let's go to Fred. Like missing Fred VanVleet is a big deal. Like that's just like a really big deal. Like he's their best or second best player, or if you really want to get into it, third best. If you really want to go down that road, like
we can go down that road.
Yeah,
like, Chris Boucher, man. Chris Boucher is having a season.
No, God, I can't do this. I've already argued about Pascal Siakam with Matt enough. I don't need to
Boucher's have been up and down this year, but they could have used him, right? Like part of it was the rap. Like they needed scoring, right? Like they needed scoring, and they didn't have anybody.
I could have used Aaron Baines, but he's got a DNP CD tonight.
Whew, man, I'm about to fall from grace. That's rough.
Man, yeah, it's rough.
But hey, you say you wanted to talk about Porter and Malone. I talked about this last night on the podcast and just wanted to share like the journey that Porter has had to go through just to come all the way back has won me over in a way that I didn't know if he would. He clearly showed talent and he clearly showed effort, but the resilience to kind of work through some of those really dark days and work through some of those times where he was getting DNPs and then had 0 points in a game against the Boston Celtics where all the pressure was on him and he completely flubbed it earlier this year in February. That was two months ago. It's a complete turnaround. He's making moves now and making plays on the offensive and defensive end that I did not know if he could. And I think his relationship with Malone is a big reason for that. Just having his back, them both having each other's back and Porter kind of earning that respect through buying in.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, you go ahead, DJ.
The trust that they have built, because like Ryan was saying, the dark days of Porter not playing much, the slow upbringing that he had with this Nuggets team, Michael Malone took a lot of heat for that. But I think we're going to look back on this, and we've talked about this even last year, about Porter kind of needing a coach like this. Could you really give him the Trae Young route and just let him go on a bad team and just shoot? Would he turn into the player that he even is right now? Would he even be at that point? So I think that this relationship, while it has had its ups and downs, and it will continue to. They're both very prideful individuals, Malone and Porter. There's going to be blowups like we saw today, but there is now an underlying trust that has been built on that foundation. They understand that Malone wants the best for Porter, and that Porter is needed for the Nuggets to be their best. And I think that is fully understood by all parties now, and that's going to allow for these moments to exist without actually diverting things in a negative way. It seems like that relationship is much more solid than I would have thought it would have been at this stage.
I just remember how much heat Malone took the last 2 years. Like, he's took so much heat for this process because fans want the shiny object, and they just wanted him to get minutes and touches and points and make mistakes and, you know, don't lose, can't lose. Not saying that, like, let Porter screw up, but you still need to win the game.
And play Bull Bull and play Bull Bull.
No, yeah, I was just going to say, like, the Bull Bull experience this year at Pepsi Center or Ball Arena, it's unbelievable how much louder Pepsi or Ball Arena gets for Bull Bull than anybody else on the roster, which is, it's frankly kind of irritating.
He's getting that Boban effect.
This team is really good, and they have the most valuable player, and Jamal Murray gave his heart and soul for this team, and Michael Porter's given his heart and soul for this team now. So, like, there are so many more reasons to cheer than for Bull Bull, but it really does feel like a reprisal of Nuggets fans just saying, hey, look, another shiny object. I'm in full agreement with you, Matt. That, look, I was pretty hard on Malone initially for the Porter thing, because I thought that, look, you could see the end goal here and you could see where he was going, and it's about preparing him for those moments. In his way, he did. And I think it might have not taken full manifest in the bubble, but now it certainly is in the 2021 playoffs. I think that we can fully say that.
I think the young man needed to, he needed to hit some adversity. Mm-hmm. The injury was definitely a setback, right? And he had to work really hard to get back, but he also got to do that on his timeline. You know, he spent 2 years getting back from that injury. And he, in every other instance, he had been able to do what he wanted and had been the best player on the floor. And so, Malone, I'll just say this. I even after all this time covering Malone, and I'm heartbroken that the last 2 years we haven't been able to be in, like, last year rather, we haven't been able to be in the locker room, because there's so many questions I want to ask. Among them is, I really want to understand how it is that Malone keeps them with how fiery he is and how demanding he can be. But there is always, I will say this. I talked to some veterans in the transition between Shaw and Malone. And one of them was like Mike Miller. And we were talking about, we're in the locker room one day and just talk about Mike's approach. And I mentioned that Michael never flames guys in the press. Like, he just doesn't go out there and blast guys. He never calls out a guy. He hasn't done it. I think he's done it twice
The last time was Gallo, right? Like, it's been a long time.
Yeah, because they lost to the Kings.
throwback, man.
No kidding. No kidding. The one thing he can't resist.
Just, man, that was only like 2.5, 3 years ago. That's
still going to be mad. He's going to be mad forever. The Kings firing
still
him.
Still doesn't wear purple.
But he, I was talking to Mike Miller about Michael Malone. I was talking about Malone and about how he doesn't flame guys in the press. And Miller said, that's part of it. He said, the other thing is that he treats you like a professional, which that's one of the big mistakes that guys make, especially with young teams, mm-hmm. is they try and coach young teams like they're college teams. And you can't do that at this level because those guys have agents and those guys those guys learn from the other players in the room, and those players are all pros that have been around, and they're not going to put up with that nonsense. And then that sets the tone for the younger players not to do that. And it's like, Malone doesn't do that. Millsap has mentioned this, that one of the biggest things that Malone did in terms of adjustment, I always thought it was hilarious. They really started taking off when Malone started canceling mm-hmm. practice the day after wins.
Yep.
And then canceling shoot arounds. And I was like, is it that much of a problem? And Millsap's like, no. He's like, most of us go in and do work anyway. He's like, but it's the fact of, like, we get to make the decision in our time because like we're paid to show up and play the game. We're paid for the games. You know, if we need to go in and do stuff, then okay, we'll go do it. But changing it to where it's not this required thing was big. And so he's managed to get this accountability out of Porter, which I think is really huge. And like, look, I'll also be really honest with the two of you. I don't expect it to last forever.
Oh, of course not.
Not even like Malone here. I mean, specifically the Malone MPJ dynamic. Like, well,
that's going to be fascinating. When Porter becomes the player that he can potentially be, how willing is he going to be to listen to other people? Yeah. Because things are going to work. Like, Porter is just so gifted as a basketball player that he will stumble his way to 25 points a night. But is he going to keep listening? And I think that's where we get back to this Malone conversation. Malone does not see these guys as players. They're humans. Like, Malone has a real relationship with almost every single player he has coached. And that always seems to transfer, even when you're talking to guys in the media, as you know, players being asked about Malone when he's up for coach of the year or whatever it may be, that seems like that has a chance to hold now. Like, I feel much better about Malone being able to get through to Porter in 2 years right now than I did 6 months ago. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
I think it's probably fair. And just, I'm more of a fan. I'm the only fan in this conversation of the mm-hmm. Denver Nuggets. And I think I would say that I have confidence in the culture that they have established, not just from Michael Malone, but from Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, who are two very important pieces who will sacrifice for Michael Porter in some cases. Mm-hmm. They already have shown that they will sacrifice for Michael Porter in some cases. That is going to continue as Michael Porter continues to showcase just how talented he is and how much points he can score. And some of the things that he can do at the end of games, as well as the beginning, that dynamic is going to be really interesting for me. That's probably the one thing that I look at that, hey, is he going to start being worked into the clutch time offense of this group? Is it not just going to be Murray Jokic two-man game at the top of the key or Jokic in the post? Like, what are we doing here? And how is this going to work? That is where, like, and maybe that's me kind of oversimplifying things on the in-game stuff, because so much of this is cultural. So much of this is off the floor too. If he can get what he wants within this team, just kind of sharing the spotlight with those other two, then I think it will be okay. He may not feel that way though. And it's why I continue to kind of coin this to the James Harden situation in OKC. Like, it wasn't just because Sam Presti made a mistake. It was because he wanted his own team. James Harden did.
I'm going to be so curious to see how Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. coexist when Murray comes back in a year of practice and game and playoff reps between Nikola Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. developing chemistry. How are they then going to reassemble that together with an improved and a more dynamic Michael Porter Jr., who is now used to playing with the ball in his hand significantly more often? That's the relationship that I'm curious about, because Murray said all of the right things, but at the very start of their time together on the court, there was issues in terms of just getting the ball from Murray to Porter sometimes. That's not to say it was on purpose or anything, but there was clear statistical evidence that it wasn't getting there. So I'm very curious to see how that relationship will coexist, because as Porter continues to grow in advance without Murray, he'll start to pick up more and more of Murray's role, I'm sure, because he wants to play with the ball in his hands more. He wants to create more often. He wants to run pick and roll with Jokic. So if those things start to happen, there could be some butting of heads between Jamal Murray and Porter down the line that, you know, obviously are a year away, but are going to be just as important as the Malone-Porter dynamic, in my opinion.
Take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the doom of the next several games facing the Denver Nuggets. We'll talk about that, how they're going to weather it, and all that, and I'll look at the playoff picture when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Like, oh, I don't know if you want to bet on the NFL draft and bet that the Broncos would not take a quarterback. Or, like me, bet on who the Niners took today because the odds started moving rapidly because word got out and the number and large bets started coming in on their selection number 3. Baseball season's in full swing, and you can track all that action at Bet Online. This week has tons of sports action, NFL draft, Kentucky Derby is back as the first leg of the Triple Crown begins this weekend. All the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get in the game as teams prep for the runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using promo code LOCKEDON. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Matt Moore with you in the final segment alongside TJ McBride and Ryan Blackburn. We've got a stretch coming up of Nuggets games, which, oh boy, gents, it is it's not pretty. The good times have been here. Maybe they'll continue, but this is the next, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games. Clippers on Saturday, that is for the three, control of the three seed. If the Nuggets win, they control the three seed. If the Nuggets lose, I would say you can probably kiss the hopes of the three seed goodbye. Monday, Los Angeles Lakers. It is unlikely the Lakers pass the Nuggets anyway. If the Nuggets were to win that game, there would be no chance. If the Nuggets were to lose to the Lakers, I guess there's like a small chance, but I don't really think so. Then on Wednesday, you've got the Knicks, who are, that's like not a gimme. That's a tough game. Ooh, that's a way harder. Genuinely tough game. You've got Utah and then a back-to-back versus the Nets.
No big deal.
So let's just go over the seeds there. That is 3 seed, 5 seed, 4 seed, 1 seed, maybe depending on what happens, Utah, Phoenix on Friday, and 1 seed. They play potentially both 1 seeds, the 3 seed, a 4 seed, and a 5 seed over the next little stretch of games. This run that they've been on has been incredible. They've won a lot of games. Now, a lot of that was with Murray. A lot of that was with the Gordon, or some of that was with the Gordon fully healthy Nuggets team, like the last win versus the Clippers. You take wins where you can get them and you play who's in front of you. Over these next 5, TJ, what should you reasonably expect the Nuggets record to be? Like, I get they've played well and won all these games and they keep finding ways, but like, this is a brutal schedule stretch.
If they eclipse 2-3, it's a win. That's really how I'm looking at this. And it doesn't matter what combination, because for me at this point, the 3 seed, it would be nice and pretty to have it. But like, as long as you can hold on to this 4 seed and no one catches you from behind, you can kind of be okay with that. I know you want to avoid the Lakers, but there's a lot of movement now. I know that you have gotten into this like a crazy person, because you always do, but there's not a whole lot of ways to judge where things are going to end up right now. So for me, it's really just get 2 of those wins and keep momentum going, keep yourself positive, and don't have any more injuries. If those things happen, it doesn't really matter to me. So 2-3 in any capacity is a win for me.
So the Mavericks play on Saturday, the Lakers play the Kings on Friday. Kings have been a little frisky, also lost by 49 points to the Jazz. So you don't know what to expect out of the Kings in that game. But if the Lakers lose and the Mavericks win, the Mavericks take over control of the 5 seed this weekend.
Yeah.
So a lot of things to be decided still. Obviously, the Nuggets can help their own case by winning on Monday. Ryan, what are your expectations over this next stretch of 5 games?
So I want to highlight the Utah Phoenix game, because I'm going to make a premise here that I think it's more likely the Phoenix falls to 4. Then the Clippers fall to 4, just based off of their schedule, based off of what some of those teams have to play for. If Utah does win that game against Phoenix, then Phoenix would only be 2 games up on Denver at that point. And they still have to face a lot of teams that have something to play for outside of the Thunder, who are awful, but did win just recently. So that's something that I would focus on, that end of the standings. But with Denver, I think I'm going to put my fan hat on here and say that they can go 3-2. I don't think it's likely, and I think it's probably more likely that they go 1-4 than they go 3-2. But if you pick up one win in LA, either against the Clippers or the Lakers, I feel like you can circle that Knicks game, despite the fact that they have had a renaissance, despite the fact that they're better than they were, and still say, look, that is a game that you can definitely win. Like if you can't win that game, then I feel pretty bad, because the Knicks offense isn't like they've had a renaissance lately, but the way that they do it is through Julius Randle and RJ Barrett. And I feel like Denver can defend both of those guys with their personnel.
I would say this, you can classify these games into, because you know, I'm the betting guy, favored dogs and then coin flips. And I would say the Lions, they'll be dogs to the Nets probably, depending on who plays. But I would say the way I break it down is there'll be dogs to both of the Lakers and Clippers. Split one of those two. You should be favored versus the Knicks. You can win that game. The Nuggets have been very good versus those teams. The Jazz, let's just go ahead and chalk that as a loss. I know like Conley and Mitchell might not be back, and that helps, right? But the Jazz are still really good, and Denver's still down three major rotation pieces. And then the Nets game, I also think, is a coin flip, just because the Nets do not have a consistent win profile. I am going to refute your Phoenix claim. And the reason I'm going to refute your Phoenix claim, important thing, if you're listening to the show and you're looking at schedules and you're trying to find like who's going to do what, don't just pay attention to how tough the opponents are. Look at, you can find this online. ESPN has what's called expanded standings. Go to that page. Just Google NBA expanded standings. And what you'll find is on those expanded standings, you'll find record versus teams over 500 and record versus teams under 500. So as a good example of this, the Phoenix Suns have the fewest losses of any Western Conference team versus teams over 500. They have been stellar versus teams over 500. They've also been really good versus teams below 500. That's how that they are in position to get the number one seed. But like compare that, if you look at that and you compare it, the Jazz have as many wins as the Suns do versus teams over 500, but two more losses. They have fewer losses versus teams under 500. The Suns are a little more likely to lose to like whoever, but this is one of the keys with the Mavericks, because Mavericks fans are like, ooh, our schedule's so soft. And then they lost to the Kings and were in disarray. And I was like, guys, you're 12-11 versus teams under 500. Like, this is who you are. Like, that is who you are. Now, if we look at the Nuggets, right? Like that becomes the interesting question here. The Nuggets are 21-14 versus teams 500 and above. To put that in perspective, the Clippers are 22-16. So the Nuggets are better than the Clippers versus teams that are above 500. They're really slightly worse than the Clippers versus teams below 500. And that makes sense if we go back to the beginning of the season, right? Like, here's a golden oldie. Let's just take those three Kings games and flip them to wins. And that record looks remarkably different. So the key here, I think, is if they get one of the, like target one of the LA games and the Knicks game, that's all you really need. That's enough to basically clinch the five or the four rather. And that's enough. If you beat the Clippers, it's not out of the realm of possibility that you get the three. I think TJ hit on something that's important here. It's like, you want the flexibility. This is the big key, is like, now I don't know if you do it this year. I really don't. Like, if the Lakers are in the six, is it worth it to be like, yeah, we're going to lose this, we're going to tank this last game of the season and purposefully lose so we don't have to play the Lakers? So we get, like, at this point, I'm kind of like, you're without Jamal. There is part of me, honestly, because I'm always like trying to go galaxy brain, face him without Jamal.
Wait.
And, listen, because if you face the Lakers without Jamal, you play with no pressure, right? But the bigger thing is you get to try out whatever it is that you want to try out. And you get to know, okay, we lost these minutes because of this matchup. Like, all right, Paul definitely can't guard AD. We're gonna have to bring back JaVale or get a replacement, because we're gonna have to play two bigs versus Drummond AD. If you lose because of the Caruso Kuzma lineup minutes, right? Like, man, Kuzma just like absolutely blistered MPJ. Okay. Well, we know that we're going to need the next time. We're probably going to want to play Gordon on Kuzma and then play MPJ on Morris or whoever else. Right. So like, use it as a learning experience.
You're talking about using the rematch of the Western Conference Finals in a playoff series as data acquisition. And that's just objectively feels so horrendously wrong. Like, no, that is not what you do. You try and win basketball games and the MVP is literally on your roster doing what he's doing.
You're not trying not to win. That's my point. You can't go in with your normal game plan versus the Lakers without Jamal in.
Of course, but at the same time, Jokic against Anthony Davis and LeBron James is much more difficult than Jokic against whatever the Clippers have healthy at that current time. Like, that is still a clear benefit to play the Clippers over the Lakers. So that is still something worth pursuing. And this can
I guess here's the other way to think of it. If you want to go this way, it's like, okay, if it's the 4-5 and it's the Mavericks, right? Your path is then Mavericks, Jazz to get to the conference finals. And that's like a lot more likely.
For sure.
I guess for me, I'm just of the thought process of what should be your goal the rest of the season. I know that they're going to they will tell themselves like, no, we can do this. Like, we can win.
Yeah.
Right. I just.
Matt, you've covered this team longer than me. You know exactly how this is going to go. They are
I don't know that because I don't know that I am not. I'll tell you this. I am not sure that Malone believes they can win.
Wow. I am absolutely in disagreement. I haven't been around as much, so maybe I'm missing something here. But Malone is not a guy to roll over and die ever.
No, he'll take the same approach. He always does. Like, and he will scrap and claw and fight and yell and be mad and all of those things. I guess maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Malone is not using a playoff series for data acquisition. That is never going to happen, in my opinion.
So let's talk about it then.
Go ahead, Ryan.
If you go against the Lakers, you feel a lot better about that series overall because you have Aaron Gordon and because Michael Porter's in a much better place than he was. And maybe you take a game off of them. Maybe you take two. But I don't think it's going to be anything special unless Nikola Jokic just happens to be unguardable in that series, which is very possible, by the way. If you go up against Dallas and you have Aaron Gordon to guard Luka Doncic and you have Michael Porter out there being guarded by Dorian Finney-Smith, I still feel pretty good about that matchup, and I feel pretty good about them advancing. And you still also have an opportunity to get as far as you can. And like, let's just be honest about it. Do you think that they could win against the Utah Jazz without Jamal Murray?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
So what are we talking about here?
That's my point.
I think what I'm talking about is even if they get past the Utah Jazz, they make the conference finals. And at that point, they're probably facing the Lakers.
Okay. But then why are we playing basketball?
Four.
Like, why, like, what is the point? Like, should everybody have just like not played when the Warriors were winning 73? Like, I don't know why you don't try. I don't know why the,
I'm not
like,
saying not to try though. TJ, I'm not saying not to try.
You said the
thought process. I'm not trying to say like, I'm not saying like you play against the Lakers and you just like, hey, we're going to not start Nikola and we're just going to try to you try and win. My point here, and like, I do believe this, the Lakers, I don't know when LeBron's coming. I thought he'd be back by now.
Yeah. So that's the case, you put them against the Clippers in the first round playoff series and keep yourselves in the 4-5 with Dallas. And then you hope that the Lakers get beaten the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which is possible against that team.
So I'll ask you this is, do you both then, if the Nuggets are in the 3 seed and they have control over which seed they'll get when, if they win, they're the 3 seed, if they lose, they're the 4 seed on the last night of the regular season versus Portland, I might add, I got to check this. Hang on. This is a very important
one. They've done this.
Okay, it's in Portland, so it's okay. I was going to say you can't let Carmelo win in Denver. That's
that record has to be unblemished. And again, I know that one.
Are you both saying that you think it would be best for them to tank that game to purposely get the Mavericks in the 4-5?
Yes.
Ryan?
I would agree. Yes, I think that that's the right call. And because if I know that the Mavericks would prefer the Nuggets over the Lakers or the Clippers, I know that that is a very real and understandable thing as well. I don't care. Like, I don't trust Kristaps Porzingis in a playoff series, and I don't trust Tim Hardaway Jr. in a playoff series to be like the second leading scorer.
I will also say one more thing, though. Part of the plan of avoiding Houston was trying to not play them. Let's say that you lose that final game and you slide into the four and the Mavericks tank back as well, and you find up facing the Lakers as well. And what you have said with your actions is, we are terrified of the Lakers and don't want to play them. And then you're in a 4-5.
This is, though, it's picking the best of two options. I don't think that this comes down to we're terrified of you. It's just, these are two very good teams and we match up better with the Clippers or the Mavericks. It can be just that
simple. I mean, look, I was the first one 2 years ago, because like I had front office members texting me being like, wait, are you telling me that if we do this, then Houston can't play us? And I was like, yeah, that's how the tiebreaker.
That's math. Yeah.
So funny.
Like I've been on the, they should definitely try and avoid Houston and they should manipulate the matchups. I'm always in favor of this. I think optimizing your matchup is the thing. I will just say though, like, this team, because they're in such a fuck you mode and because they're in such a us against the world, I think this is a great spot to try and go pull the biggest upset imaginable. You knocked off the Clippers last year. Go knock off the Lakers this year. If you knock off the Lakers, like, everyone's just going to be like, why won't they die?
Could you imagine the narrative around Nikola Jokic if that happened? I'm not ready for that conversation.
Here's the other thing I will tell you. Let's say that it won't happen because the Nuggets will have to play last because they play Portland. It's TBD. No, they haven't scheduled the last day of games. I will guarantee you this. Bet me right now. If there is a possibility of both the outcome of a Mavericks, I don't even know if the Mavericks play that day. If there's an outcome of a Mavericks or Lakers game, and the outcome of the Nuggets game determine whether or not Clippers Lakers is round one, I guarantee you the league will make the Nuggets play an earlier game versus Portland. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, it's really weird. Luka was going to play and now he's not playing. And neither is Kristaps Porzingis.
And Denver's playing some sloppy 1 p.m. Sunday game.
And then it's really weird. The league suspended Luka Doncic for
flopping,
smiling,
yeah, for flopping. He was just awarded a
double tech for a single flop and to send him home.
8 different Mavericks were assessed double technicals before the game and are not eligible. Like,
just do the 76ers thing and say that everyone's hurt and we can't play.
Yeah. So this is a whole, like, so this is really, you know, I think there's a lot of hijinks that can continue. This has been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed talking to you guys. I miss our talks at Ball Arena, Pepsi Center, Ball Arena. It's good to talk to you guys. Thank you so much for coming on. For those of you listening, make sure to tune in our locker room on Friday at 12. We'll be on there. You can join in and join the conversation and rate, review, and subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nuggets. Big apologies about the delay in last night's episode. Adam, literally, we got the whole episode thing. And then I'm pretty sure that he pressed publish and then closed his laptop like I do sometimes. And it doesn't actually publish.
It's like about a 4-minute stretch there where it uploads to the interweb.
Yeah, he was not happy that it didn't upload. I'll say that. Not a happy man. Make sure to follow Adam's work at DNVR. Check out the Pickaxe and Roll podcast from Ryan Blackburn. Follow TJ McBride on Twitter. Leave me alone on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm about to say.
And I'll talk to you guys again tomorrow. We'll have locker room tomorrow and then another episode Saturday night after the Clovers game on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us.